intend to start this way, but it just was so striking to me to realize again, it's really complicated to be a human being. I mean, just language. I mean, think of all the thousands of languages, our capacity to learn languages and the fact that we talk to each other and that we can sit here and have a huge conversation about something that we did 10 years ago and laugh and, you know, just feel it all alive again. We also do things that aren't good for us. We have some kind of, you know, little director in our head that tells us to do things that really aren't really in our best interest. I mean, I heard this story once of somebody who wanted to be in a medical internship with integrative medicine, and I think it was Herbert Benson was walking down the street, and he really wanted to meet him, but he was smoking. And so he put the cigarette out in his hand, burned his hand, so that he could meet Herbert Benson and he would think that he was a healthy person. I mean, no, seriously. But anyway, the reason that this was coming to me was all of a sudden there was a dog barking. And, you know, if we were like really practicing just this, it would just be dog barking. But right away, oh, that's Terry Winter's dog barking. You know, it just comes in so fast, and I don't even know if that's true. So, you know, this is what happens. This is what being human is about. And so what we're being given in the Dharma is an incredible gift to go beyond our human tendencies, I guess you'd say, but it's not so easy either. But I did want to begin by just talking about something that I do. Like often I get up really early in the morning and I just go before my, you know, sort of formal zazen, I just go and I sit on a couch and I open the screen door because there's a little bamboo waterfall that's dripping outside. And I just sit and listen to the water dripping. And then I notice my breath. And sometimes I put my hand on my hara just to kind of bring my breath down. And sometimes my eyes just sort of tear up just in that act of coming into my breath. And, you know, sometimes the words come, you know, my precious life. And my breath seems to naturally move down. I notice, even if I'm lying on the couch, kind of, the breath goes down to my feet and I can feel the earth. And then gradually, it's almost like, I don't know, it's like waking up, I guess. My ears start to open and sometimes I can hear the birds all of a sudden. I hadn't noticed them right before that. This morning, I got up so early, it was so dark, I don't think the birds had woken up yet. So it was just very, very silent. And just this experience, my precious life, your precious life, we're alive, we're here together. And yet, who am I? Who are you? Even we're all present here, and we're all present in our minds, but really, this all that's presence, whatever that means, it's ungraspable. And here we are, together. And I like this quote from Suzuki. He says, to take care of the exhalation is very important. To die is more important than trying to be alive. When we try to be alive, we have trouble. Rather than trying to be alive or active, if we can be calm and die or fade away into emptiness, then naturally we will be all right. Buddha will take care of us. So this simple practice of staying with our bodies, feet on the ground, letting something uncomfortable just be here, maybe for a moment, no words, no stories, just wobbly, just this unknown me here. I like the word decentered awareness. Our awareness often ends up becoming focused on something. And decentered awareness is sort of like an expansion, you know, like in the 10 directions, aware, open. We are so much more than we know, and I have to remind myself, I mean, we kind of think we know each other here. But with my family or neighbors, I have to remind myself, there's so much about you I don't know. There's so much about me you don't know, mainly because we're not fixed. We're moving, we're open. And so to meet each other in these moments with that sense of I don't know, you know, is one way that we can sort of welcome the possibility of something fresh happening between us. And I love chanting the refuges. I think it's one of our basic practices, taking refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Really, this is our basic foundation of faith. We take refuge, letting go into some larger truth, the infinite generosity of all things, of the emptiness of all things. So no matter where we are in this moment, no matter what we're suffering from, we can take refuge, we can let go, and give it over to the Buddha. So in the Webster Dictionary, the usual definition of refuge is to find or seek shelter or protection from danger or distress. To find or seek shelter, protection from danger or distress. And like a refugee coming to the United States is coming here to seek protection, safety. But when we take refuge in Buddha, this is about more than receiving protection or shelter from danger or our suffering. Remember what we chant. Before all being, immersing body and mind deeply in the way, awakening true mind, we bow, we take refuge, because we're awakening the true mind. This act of refuge awakens the Buddha mind. It's our act of opening the door for Buddha activity to penetrate our lives. So, again, our practice really is an act of faith. And so much more goes on in our zazen than we will ever know or recognize. Things go on behind the scenes, so to speak. I mean, sometimes a little crack opens and I notice, oh, all this time I've been chanting and I didn't know it. Or maybe something will crack open and I'll notice that, boy, I'm really still back with what happened yesterday. You know, we can get these little glimpses. But I just want to say, so much more goes on. And it's important that we don't forget this, because we're here to nurture our faith, to sit in this sense that no matter what, something bigger is always sitting with us. Something bigger is always at work penetrating our lives. As I said in that quote I read this morning, Buddha knowledge is like space. It has no end. Her light shines throughout the 10 directions. She knows the mental patterns of all sentient beings. There is no world Buddha does not enter. So this is really, we're here to kind of rest, to rest in our faith and to open our awareness and listen, but not have to know. We learn this from our sutra chants, and as I said in my kind of explanation of today, from in the Jewel Mirror Samadhi, it says, Yi, with his archer skill, could hit a target at 100 paces, but when arrow points meet head on, what has this to do with the power of skill? To participate in the activity of the Buddha mind is not about trying to make anything happen. It's not to rely upon what we think we know. We also learn this about true mind, that true mind is unconstructed in stillness, and it does not appear in the realm of perception because it is immediate realization. This is the self-receiving and employing samadhi. Then this realization comes spontaneously, simultaneously, interwoven with our conditioned minds and our samadhi practice. It's beyond the conditions of cause and effect. So all of this, we're being invited to consider, to wonder, well, wow, this is not of human agency at all. We can't control it. It's not in our perception, the working of the Buddha activity. It's pretty amazing that we're invited to rest in this oneness. In the Avasamtaka Sutra, it says, rest in the womb, Buddha. Rest in the womb, Buddha. We're resting in this potentiality that's always coming forth. I like Okamura's kind of commentary about this point in the Genjo Koan. He says, and this is important, that when we rest in our faith, we're resting in the exact place that we're in our lives. We're resting here. We're resting in our aging bodies. We're resting, you know, in a broken rib that once is healed, or, you know, we're here very, very uniquely and specifically in exactly the place we are in our lives. And this is what Okamura says. Here is the place. Here the way unfolds. The boundary of realization is not distinct, for realization comes forth simultaneously with the mastery of Buddha Dharma. All this, however, does not appear within perception because it is unconstructed in stillness. It is immediate realization. So don't suppose that what you realize becomes your knowledge and is grasped by your consciousness. Although actualized immediately, the inconceivable may not be apparent. Its appearance is beyond our knowledge. I mean, this is really radical. I mean, because our activity that can arise through this actualization, meeting our conditioned lives with the Buddha mind, its appearance is beyond our knowledge. We don't know for sure if it's happening or not. But in these moments, they're promised to happen. Our limited selves, actually, we transcend, we go beyond. So I've kind of been asking myself, well, I mean, what does this really mean? I mean, how is it when two arrow points meet, for example? How is it? So one person said, it is the arrowheads that fly straight, not the bowman's skill. it's the arrowheads that fly straight, not the bowman's skill. So this capacity happens sort of beyond our skill, beyond our separateness, beyond what we think it is. And so I just had wanted to share some of my thoughts about, well, you know, how could this happen? What might we be paying attention to? And then see, hear from you what your thoughts are. So one way that maybe arrowhead points meet would be in a question and answer experience, say with a teacher. We can ask a question, and maybe the interaction with the question and answer can actually open something and beyond what the two people are even aware of at the moment. So this week, I was immersing myself in the Avatamsaka Sutra along with 40 or 50 other people. And, well, that's a whole story, but there was one phrase that I was especially impacted with at a certain moment. So when I went to speak with Rev Anderson and Dobasan about this, I expressed this phrase to him, but realized that if any of you had read the same phrase, how it affected you would be different than how it affected me. So it's not like there is the meaning. So it did affect me beyond what I was fully aware of. And so when I expressed this to him, I'm not sure how it happened, but he somehow got it. He heard what it meant to me, beyond what I knew it meant to me. And in that moment, it was like we both came together, and it was like immediate. It didn't require a long conversation, because instantly, a whole issue I had been struggling with kind of, you know, unraveled and showed me something. So that would be an example of two arrow points meeting, that when we come together in an inquiry and we listen, that sometimes, you know, something opens up, and it opened up for him too. It wasn't just me, it was something between us. So another possibility of how this happens is through taking risks. I learned of this story about a person of color, a black woman who was describing this experience and informing me or helping me remember that for African American women whose ancestors were enslaved, that they have almost biologically in their genes a memory of women being the help, working in the kitchens, in the plantations, you know, as slaves. And she said that in her culture, basically, the word out is stay away from kitchens. It's dangerous to be in kitchens. So this person had lived with this most of her life, but she got involved in Buddhism and was on her first sesshin, and somebody asked her to come and help in the kitchen. So she was able to at least talk to herself and say, I know it's safe to be in this kitchen, even though, you know, she had a lot of reactions. So she took the risk to go and help in the kitchen, and in that process had to face, allow many demons to emerge. So it was not an easy experience. She had to turn towards what's so painful and difficult. We can't avoid that. But in the process, it's the first time she felt love coming from the people in the kitchen towards her, a love that she could receive. So in my mind, this is two arrow points meeting. They met at the point of her deep suffering, but also at the point of taking a risk to enter more fully into life, and to, for that, at that point, into the Sangha. So another thought I've had, and this so sort of connected to what we've been saying so far, to just, when we practice, to stay with what's here, what's coming up, not to try to analyze it, not to try to fix it, not to turn away. It reminded me of a time I was here at Valley Streams, and I was sitting in my zazen, and this sort of deep feeling of loneliness came up for me. And it was a familiar loneliness that goes back to my childhood. And it was not comfortable at all. But I did find a way to stay with it and to bring sort of self-compassion to myself. But then the amazing thing was, is that we ended the sit and I got up, and there was somebody who had come to the Sangha the first time, so it was a new person. And before I could even think, my body just walked over to her, and I introduced myself, and then she started talking about a trauma she had, was in the middle of, and she said, "I just feel so alone." So to me, that was two arrow points meeting, because my attunement, my ability to stay with my loneliness, in a sense on a bodily level, there was a resonating with somebody else. It was attuned on some level beyond my awareness. I mean, it wasn't anything I knew was going to happen or I thought about. So this is another sort of thought about, what does this mean? This, practice realization, the two arrow points meeting, that's beyond our comprehension, that's beyond our perception, but that we can, sort of engage these practices. Staying with our own suffering attunes us, allows us to break out and reach out. So then the last one I just wanted to offer is to notice the conditioned mind at work. And this goes back to what I said at the beginning about how complicated it is to be a human being, because I was walking in my neighborhood, and there are these beautiful tall-stemmed blue flowers in a bunch, on the side of the road, and I was walking, and, oh, so beautiful. And then, within a nanosecond, well, my flowers that look just like that, they aren't as beautiful as these flowers. And then I could feel, not didn't literally do this, but I could feel my body grabbing the flowers, like I wanted them. And that happened so fast that if we're not practicing and aware, it just slips by us, because I missed. I got pulled away from, just going with what's arising, staying present, being open to the flow, allowing the reality of just this to be experienced, to be lived. So that's another thought that I had. Just so we have some time just for some discussion, I wanted to just close with this Blue Cliff record that relates to all of this. It's very, this Blue Cliff record is called Wei Chow Asks About Buddha. And a monk named Wei Chow asked Fa Yen, let me start over. I'm getting the names mixed up. So Huao Chao went to the teacher Fa Yen and said, "What is Buddha?" And the master teacher Fa Yen said, "You are Huai Chao." That's the whole story. You are Huai Chao. Arrow points meeting. Very few words. Direct connection. And in this commentary, this is what is said. It won't do just to have me tell you. You yourself must tune your spirit all day long. If you can attain fulfillment the way these people did, then someday you will let down your hand for people in the crossroads and won't consider it a difficult thing either. You can tune yourself to spirit all day long. If you can attain fulfillment the way these people did, then someday you will let down your hand for people in the crossroads and won't consider it a difficult thing either. Thank you. So I welcome just a time to hear what's come up for you and maybe other experiences that made a connection for you that you've had, or questions. Jin.
thank you for your talk. Your story about the African-American woman, black woman who... Oh. Your story about the African-American woman who got invited to the kitchen.
Yeah.
Reminded me of is, or what I think is that, yes, arrow points can meet, but not necessarily without struggle.
Well, right, that's without, the point.
Not necessarily like, this is always what's gonna happen and it's all gonna be perfect, you know? Arrow points definitely can meet. So it reminded me also of a time that I went to see my teacher and ask him about the meaning of a koan. And it goes along quite well with what your last quote was. And he said, I won't tell you. And this was in the context of a 3-week intensive, so I had more chances to see him, and I kept asking him this question. And I think the second time he also said, I won't tell you. But the third time I asked about it, he broke down and told me. And I felt like, so, you know, there was some struggle there, but at the end, I got what I wanted.
The answer.
And I think he did too, because I think he really did kind of want to tell me. I felt like he really would like to tell me. So if I just keep asking, it'll be fine. It'll work out. I didn't think that, but in retrospect, that's how I think.
Yeah, the struggle. Yeah. Yeah. Cody.
Thank you for your talk. What came up for me during your talk was how you were basically speaking to how we have to hold two things that are completely contradictory at the same time in terms of the suffering that we might have from a conditioned mind and body, and also simultaneously this freedom that we have without any effort. What came up for me when you were bringing that up was, as you know, I have two little ones right now, and I have no illusion that I'm a Buddha. Everything,
yeah.
Any kind of conditioning that I feel like I've had has come up, particularly around parenting and different things that I kind of have to look over my shoulder, like, where did that one come from? You know, where did that anger or frustration come from? And noticing how some of it comes from my parents, some of it comes from culture, some of it comes from society, and that I didn't necessarily agree to take all that on. and at the same time not to see myself in a certain light just because this is what is arising, just because this is the conditioned suffering or conditioned responses that I have coming up, and being able to hold those two is kind of like a cognitive dissonance, you know? It's like I'm having two alter egos that are flip-flopping back and forth. And I think it kind of speaks to how you and Jim were just talking about. Sometimes it's alleviating to see that this mass of conditioning that I inherited isn't mine. It's not, it doesn't define who I am. And at the same time, it's quite painful because you still have to hold it. You still have to make space for it. So thank you for your talk. I feel like that really flipped the switch for me.
Thank you for just the way that you're articulating, you know, the human condition, especially for us who want to enter into the practice and want to realize the Dharma and bring it to other people, that this kind of awareness and the holding of the suffering that it maybe you thought was personal, but it isn't always personal. It's cultural. It's, you know, generations. It's all of that, and yet to be able to hold it without having it reflect anything about your basic goodness as a person, you know, that's huge. Thank you.
Thank you again, Dorothy, for your examples. That opened up whole new things for me. I really appreciate that. What occurred to me right now is I am a little bit handicapped with a twisted ankle, and I've had to accept help because I can't carry things, and I can't move as fast. And it occurred to me as you were talking is that I always thought of the arrow points meeting as two actors that were doing something. And it just hit me that it's accepting the help that's offered, that's coming to me spontaneously. I'm not asking for it, but people are coming and offering to assist. And that is an arrow point meeting. Without any act, it's an opening up on my part, but it's not an active thing. And I've always thought of it as two actors. Yeah, so thank you for that paradigm shift.
Yeah, it's beautiful that you can receive. Yeah.
And that someone can give.
That's true. Yeah. Thank you, Sarah. Yes, Oscar.
When I hear or think of the phrase arrow points meeting, often I think of a line from a Dylan song, the bricks, when he was in an exalted state, I think, the bricks they lay on Bond Street, they all seem so well timed. Actually, I have some experience on Bond Street, and there are a lot of in New York City. And there are a lot of bricks there, piled up, many bricks. And they're piled up so as to form late 19th century buildings, actually, loft buildings. And it seems to me miraculous that all those bricks have come together in this 5 billion year old universe, at that point in time, when Dylan was probably in a loft on Bond Street, thinking about things. So, my takeaway from that is that the bricks, is that arrow points are always meeting, constantly. Like, I'm looking at you, and there's an arrow points at me. So It's pretty miraculous how could all these people be here in this room at one point in this infinite universe, infinite time. Here am I talking in this with this microphone here and now.
The miraculousness of this truth always happening. Thank you. Matthew, you have to come and take it from me.
Thank you. Thank you, Dorothy, for the talk. It's interesting that some of the Jhumir Samadhi is one of them just really struck me, so I have my verses on my desk. But I was thinking about the talk today, yesterday, and yesterday as I was thinking about the talk, because I had stepped away for a while, and I felt like pretty composed, and then yesterday this older part of my kind of persona came up that I thought had, you know, retired, and there it was, fresh, new, vibrant, like ready to go. And I was like, no, like, I just wanted to run the other way. I just wanted to, lock it in the attic. And I was reading this Zen case, I'm not sure which one, but talked at the beginning about cinnabar and gold being, you know, the same. They're not opposite, but the same. Reading all through the case, and I get to the end, and there's this line that says, remember to show hospitality to your partner. Mm-hmm. And it just hit me that part of me is my partner. And, you know, the whole guest and the host, and the host and the host in the Jhumir Samadhi, and I'm always the guest, and I'm always running. Not I'm not. Okay, I'm not always, but I'm just saying that I is constantly being the guest. It's constantly out there searching for new things, trying on new clothes, new personas, and the host is the one that stays, remains, and invites the guest, and doesn't put the guest in the attic, you know, in the right the room with a lock on it. And I realized at that moment, oh, this isn't something that I need to run from or detest or anything. I need to show the kindness. I need to show the hospitality. And as you were talking just now, I realized that, oh, wait a minute, I missed it again, because the I that's talking right now is just another such construct. If you know what I mean. Like, the one part of me that I don't really like, but this part that I do like, they're just those parts, they're not the Buddha, yeah. And those are the two arrowheads that meet. And then in that meeting, I don't know what takes place. I don't know what happens. That's beyond me. I can't, that's nothing to think about, but I just have to be hospitable with what I have. So thank you so much for that talk.
Thank you, and just your description of your inquiry, you know, like reading the Jhumir Samadhi, looking at this koan, it's, you know, it's sort of like the koans are alive. And so something there was arose that sort of turned the switch, so to speak. So that's also, you know, the moment of the change. And I learned at the Sesshin because I started to ask myself, what is it that you're turning away from? I just asked myself that question. But, you know, it's sort of like, well, how can you answer that question? Because if you're turning away from it, you're not going to like know about it. But anyway, but suddenly it occurred to me to not ask that question, but to say, what is it that I'm turning away from that I need to turn towards? And so once I was able to sense turning towards, then what I had been avoiding just came up. It's like the denial was gone and it just came up. So, you know, sometimes we skip the step by saying, what are we turning away from, or don't avoid that, but maybe we need the presence first, the inner presence of unconditional love before something even will reveal itself to us. So, Anyway, thank you, Matthew. I guess it's maybe we need to stop now. So, or did you want to say something, Dave?
Well, I was just going to, there've been a number of times in my life when things that I wanted and just seemed beyond ungraspable would suddenly come to fruition. And at these times, it was all too perfect. No, it couldn't have happened this well. And it just, in these few times that something like this has happened, that has kind of changed a direction in my life. So I've always kind of, how the heck did that happen? And thank you. Now I know this is 2 arrowheads meeting, and I won't worry about it anymore.
And it's outside of perception, right?
Exactly. Yes.
What to say? What happened?
Yes. It was like, no, this couldn't have happened this perfectly.
Yeah. Wow.
But yet it did.
And yet it did. Wow.
And, now I know it's 2 arrow points. I won't give any more thought.
Well, these miraculous. The word miracle has been thrown around a little bit here. It seems that way sometimes, like Oscar was mentioning. So, anyway, thank you, everybody.